The way that you're really boxed in with an Illustrator sketch is just, it's so crazy to me that people don't see the value in 3D. Every like global brand that you hear of, if they're not using 3D, they are aware of it and they're probably in the like process of trying to figure out how to implement it.
Browseware versus Clo, let's
Yes.
talk about that.
I love Clo as a company all around. Whereas I think that Browseware is starting from a more difficult foundation. For like nearly a decade, I'd been dreaming up my ideal 2D CAD because I was just like, I need a faster way to do what I'm doing. And it wasn't until I saw Clo that I was like, oh my God, this is everything I wanted and so much more. My focus with IDES is using 3D as a stepping stone to physical production, like using it to be more sustainable, more time efficient, more cost effective, and not get diverted into all the fun elements of 3D. Like, yes, it's so fun to have these beautiful images at the end, and those are the things that can like draw people to your products and your company. You just can't do it all.
Hello, welcome to Underdressed, the podcast where we talk about the clothes under our clothes and exactly how they get made. My name is Trudy Gardner. I'm the freelance designer behind Wayfinder Lingerie. In this show, I'll be exploring the art, practice, and technical execution of intimate apparel. We'll be taking a behind-the-scenes look at this industry and trying to understand exactly how designers balance creativity with functionality, specifically as it pertains to our hardworking yet delicate base layers. Thanks for listening. I'll see you in the show. Hello, listeners. Welcome back. I had such a hard time narrowing down exactly all of the clips that were my favorite from this podcast to put in the beginning. So you got a whole plethora of them. Thank you for joining me again on the podcast. This one's going to be a little bit different. Despite what I say in my intro, we don't really talk about intimate apparel in this podcast. I have Isabel from IDES Studio. And forgive me, Isabel, I said IDES wrong a few times throughout this. It's IDES, like IDES of March. I think I have it sorted out now. But I really enjoyed doing this podcast. If you like Clo 3D or you want to know a little bit more about Clo 3D, you're going to enjoy this one. Isabel has a fairly new studio, which is called IDES Studio, and she is working on developing some products surrounding learning Clo 3D. She has some 3D assets already available on her website, which is linked in the show notes. And she's also going to be developing some informational material around Clo 3D, which I'm super excited about because she has a really interesting backstory where she grew through the industry as a technical designer working for various brands like Billy Reid, Lululemon. She worked at Juilliard in the beginning. She's very articulate. I really enjoyed talking to her. We get into the differences between Clo 3D and Browseware, and we even get into talking about AI and fashion a little bit. So definitely check out Isabel's YouTube channel and all of her tutorials, and keep an eye on her courses for when they get launched, because they are definitely going to be thorough and well-researched, and she has a lot of experience in the program, so I know for sure I will be checking them out. And also, if you're curious about Clo 3D for intimate apparel specifically, I will be launching a course fairly soon, so get on my email list for that. I also have a workshop coming up this week, which is in collaboration with Sophia Luzon, who I had on a couple episodes ago. She was my first guest on the show. So me and Sophia are going to be doing a workshop together where she teaches us drafting and pattern manipulation in Clo 3D. So she's going to show us how to draft a basic block panty pattern and then manipulate that pattern to create a unique design. And then I'm going to take that pattern and I'm going to show us how to work it into a 3D model. And then in the next session, Sophia will be showing us how to grade that pattern in Clo3D. And then in the next session, I'll be showing us how to make a full graded size set. So if you're interested in a 3D workflow for intimate apparel, this is going to be perfect for you. I definitely recommend checking it out. It's hosted by the Intimate Apparel Technical Collective, and I will also put that link in the show notes. I also have a 25% discount code if you are interested in taking all four parts of the workshop. So if you are wanting that, send me a DM on Instagram or an email and I'll get you sorted out. So thanks for being here. I really love doing the podcast. I'm loving all your feedback, and I will now let you go enjoy the show.
Hello, Isabel, and welcome to the podcast. I'm super glad that you agreed to be on with me.
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, so today we have Isabel from Itty's Studio, and I'm going to let you go ahead and introduce what Itty's Studio is.
It's actually called Ides.
So Ides. I apologize. Yeah. There's always editing.
It's totally fine. I actually keep trying to subtly work it into social media so that people have it clear. Yeah. And maybe it's confusing that it's in all caps. I don't know.
Mm.
Ides like the you'll Ides
have
of
to,
March.
You'll have to tell me. Oh, Ides like the Ides of March. Okay. I might still need more explanation. I'm not that smart.
There's a little bit of a tie, but you know, sometimes it's like when you get a tattoo, you try to give it meaning and you're not sure if it had that meaning to start with, or you kind of like did it on the back end. But I've been making up businesses, like coming up with business ideas since I started working, because I always wanted to start my own business. And Ides was just a name that kept coming back around that I was like, oh, I'm not getting sick of this. So when I finally pulled the trigger, I felt like it was a good one. But the Ides of March isn't really like as deep or as clever as anyone thinks. It actually just means the middle. So I don't know why we have the Ides of March. I think maybe just the whole Julius Caesar thing. But I don't know why it couldn't be the Ides of any other month. But I liked it because it's the middle. And so I think of it as like being in the process, focusing on the process of something, being in the middle of it. So, and it's just, my name starts with an I, so I kind of like liked that connection. Yeah, I wanted something short and punchy.
I like it. I like it.
That just gave me an excuse to explain it. So
yes. All right. So we know where the name came from. Can you tell us what the studio does?
Yeah. So I'm calling it a digital fashion studio, which isn't really a term just because there's so little terminology around this field in general, the field of digital fashion. But the other thing that you might call it, or a term that's come about lately for me, is being a creator educator or creator education. So what we do is create products for people and educational materials to help them get started in 3D, or to help them along the way, primarily in Clo3D.
Okay, and who's your customer? Is it like individuals, freelancers, like small, like clothing, like independent, like sort of?
Yeah, my target that I'm still, you know, we're not even a year into it, so I'm still kind of carving out that market. Yeah, I started it in September of 2022. So what I imagine the customer to be, and kind of what I'm gathering as I go, is it's a lot of individual users, but also people in the industry. So maybe they're working for a company that's not yet using 3D. Maybe they're just learning it on the side, wanting to learn it so that they don't get left behind, or maybe start a side hustle. So I'm really trying to tap into these people in the industry. And that can also include, for sure, small businesses. So I relocated during COVID to Australia. And Australia is just like a completely untapped market in terms of 3D. So I also had this thought of like how to help really small businesses kind of get going, ones who maybe they don't even own their patterns So it's pretty tricky to start building a library. So it could be any of those people, but I definitely have tapped into this world of the individual user, which is more of a 3D world where people maybe have a bit less fashion experience and it seems more like a hobby to them.
Yeah, that's interesting because like Chloe, I feel like Chloe 3D is so democratic. Like it's so accessible, like for the price point and like the capability of the program. Like it's so I think that they and you worked for Chloe. So like I look forward to hearing what you have to say about this. But I feel like they have built the program so that they can get as many users as possible. Like they want to have a lot of people using the program. Whereas like Browseware, it's a little bit harder to like, you can get into the indie program. It's not that complicated, but like, you don't know what the price is going to be. It's like, you don't know how long you're going to have access to it for. And they're definitely targeting more like the bigger industry players.
I love that about Chloe. And that's kind of one of those things that I keep trying to shout from the rooftops. Like, it seems like people just don't realize, like, this is actually more affordable than an Adobe subscription. And I don't know anyone that doesn't have Adobe, you know?
Yeah.
So I love that about them. They are definitely inherently democratic. The other market that I'm sort of secretly trying to infiltrate is the home sewing world, or like home sewists, or I don't know what they really prefer to be called these days.
I think we say home sewists. A lot of like my audience are home sewists because that's where I started. Well, that's how I started my sewing journey, but like my entrepreneurship journey was like working for pattern makers who were making patterns for home sewists.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just an incredible market. Like, I come across people that are just, you know, creating patterns or like giving tutorials, and they'll have like 100,000 followers on Instagram.
Yeah, right. Like, and they're just doing it for love and for fun.
Hobbies. Like, and people are so doing this good at it after their job. Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah. I mean, it's not just about like, oh, I want to tap into those numbers. It's just like, I want them to know that 3D exists and is accessible to them and could change their lives.
So let's talk about 3D. So when I first started working in Chloe, when I first like downloaded the program and tried to learn how to use it, you know, follow the YouTube tutorials, and like I gave myself a month and I'm like, I'm going to just like follow the YouTube tutorials, figure out what, like how this thing works. Because I was intrigued. Like when I first found out about it, I was like, what? There's this 3D program and it like, I can afford to like purchase it for a year and learn it. And like, because 3D programs are typically like very expensive. Like they've only just become, except for Blender, right? They've only just become accessible. And so I learned it and I was like, I don't know if anybody's using this. Like I was kind of pitching it to like some of my clients and they were like, yeah, that's cool. Can you make me like these illustrations instead? And I'm like, yeah. Okay. How are you not like, how is your mind not just blown away by this? The fact that I just gave you a 3D model of the thing that you asked for a sketch for, you know? So I'd like to talk about where you see, especially like somebody who is a aspiring pattern maker or a home sewist, or maybe like a student and they want to learn 3D, but they're not sure what the use of it really is. Can you speak to that? Like how is it useful to somebody who, maybe a hobbyist or like a beginner?
Mm-hmm. Oh man. It's so incredible for just those purposes alone. So first of all, I know in the home sewing world, a lot of people do their patterns in Adobe Illustrator if they are doing digital patterns, because like we said, similarly to the 3D world, 2D CAD software is pretty unaffordable. All of the major heavy hitters of Lectra, Gerber, Optitex, they're used by businesses because, you know, it's thousands of dollars.
Like 20 grand a year or something. Yeah. They're very, very, like, nuts. They're not accessible to like us, like even an individual freelancer. Like you have to be a big business.
For sure. Or people will have some sort of in at a company they used to work for ages ago. So what I tell people about Clo and the 2D element of it is imagine Adobe Illustrator with accuracy. Like the way that it moves and everything is very much like vector drawing in Illustrator, except you can drag something over exactly 3.2 centimeters, you know? So there's that element. And we all hopefully kind of understand when you're doing pattern making digitally, you know, the changes are incredibly easy. You're not like putting paper behind and like redrawing or even like retracing the thing on fresh paper, which can often happen after you've done edit after edit, and like copying and pasting things and tracing out like other parts of the pattern. It's just, to me, it's like, it also works in a way of having a desktop, physical desktop on the computer. Like I use it in such remedial, like paper pattern making kind of ways, like literally just tracing things out. I slash and spread like I would in real life, like cut the pattern apart, spread it open, and then lay another pattern on top and trace it. But it's all digitally, so you can like print and edit and reprint and all of that. So that aspect alone is a world away from trying to do it by hand or in Illustrator. But the idea then that on the left side in your 3D window, you see these changes in real time, you know? So the little things that definitely as a hobbyist, you're not going to make another sample for, moving a pocket, a slight tweak here and there, in terms, you know, measurements under a centimeter, you're not going to do anything for. But you can see essentially the equivalent. It's hard to describe because it's not even the equivalent of a photo, because you can rotate around it all the way around, hide the avatar, look inside. You know, it takes some practice, but you can see fit issues and all of that. It's just, you know, I'm guilty when I'm making my own stuff. I almost never make a muslin or a toile or whatever your local verbiage for that is, just because I'm lazy. So I have countless garments I've made over the years that either I don't wear them or they've just never been quite right, because I know, oh, I should have taken like a half inch out of that rise, but I couldn't be bothered to make it again. Or I ran out of fabric because I didn't make a muslin first.
Yeah.
And so this is like the perfect way to avoid that, and also just avoid the material, not the time, just the time, but the material waste. Like you don't have to go buy muslin in addition to your fabric.
Yeah. Well, so true. Like the time, and I harp on that all the time too. The time and the material waste is so beneficial. There's the trade-off, I think, of spending the time learning the program. Like since I started, I don't sew very much anymore, partly because I'm mostly interested in just spending my time learning the program. Well, what I wanted to come back around to was how, yeah, like if you're learning pattern drafting, just the 2D side of the software alone is so valuable. And like, yeah, like you can do it exactly the way that you do it on paper. And then like, as you get like more comfortable with the program and the way changes are made, you can probably abandon some of those like tracing it and making it paper ways. But yeah, like I think as, like you said, as a home sewist or a hobbyist or a beginner, just the 2D side alone is worth it. And then like, and you don't have to learn the 3D side at like right away. Like you can do everything that you typically did in the 2D side and then like slowly build up like what you want to do with the 3D side. Like the way that I learned, I didn't have a strong background in pattern drafting. I was doing illustrations. And my target was the intimate apparel market. And I was doing intimate apparel illustrations. And I'd be doing these illustrations and I'd be like, wouldn't it be nice, like, that if I could show like a side view of this garment or like an inside view of this garment? And then, like that, and then I discovered Clo 3D, and I was like, why isn't everybody using this? I was like, this makes so much sense, and it might be hard to use, and it might be like difficult to learn, and it's particularly difficult for intimate apparel, but it's so good. Like, this, you can like, just like the ability to communicate with whoever you're trying to communicate with, like, this is the product that we're trying to make. Like, it just makes so much sense.
The way that you're really boxed in with an illustrator sketch is just, it's so crazy to me that people don't see the value in 3D. I love to tell this one particular story, and I don't know why it sticks in my mind, but I was working for a company. I've always been a technical designer, which we can get into if you want.
Yes, but, yes, we haven't even talked about your history yet.
But as a tech designer, you're pretty much there to like go back to the designer. And like, you're kind of keeping the designer in check for the pattern maker. So you're the advocate for both on either side. So in dealing with the factory, you're advocating for design and the design intent. And in dealing with your designer in-house, you're kind of advocating for the pattern maker, saying like, well, this isn't going to be possible. Or like, how can we make this easier?
That's just not possible. Right, yeah.
So I had this designer who, you know, she's a friend of mine now, and she had spent ages making this tech pack for some like complicated downfill outerwear piece. And I came back to her and I was like, so you said the channels would be 6 inches, right? But you've drawn like 13 channels on here and only 9 are going to fit, or only 11 are going to fit. Like, do you want the factory to follow the sketch or to follow the spec? And she was just, she like, you know, was super stressed because she'd spent so long on it and was just frantic trying to get tech packs out. And she was like, well, I'm not redrawing it. And I was like, well, this is the reason that we end up with confusion and mistakes with the factory, because they never know whether to follow your sketch or follow the spec. And if that had been done in Clo, it would have been a pretty easy fix. But she, you know, she'd done front, side, back views, interior views, in Illustrator, which is why it took her so long.
Exactly. But... yeah. Mm-hmm. And Illustrator is not easy to change. Like, when you, once you add in all the details, like, it's, you know, it takes a lot of time to revise. It can take a lot of time to revise those illustrations compared to Clo in particular.
Right.
Where it's like, just literally like, okay, just delete 6 of those lines. And like, now we have the revised like sketch or 3D.
And with
Clo,
because you're working with a 2D pattern,
like, you're already working with the correct scale.
Exactly. The proportions are built in. So, and when you draw your lines, you draw them the correct distance apart.
Exactly.
And because you're
literally using the pattern that you're going to be working on. I'm working on like a bra right now with a motif on it, and we are able to like see exactly what the motif, how we want to put it on there and what size we want to put it on there. And this is, we're just at the idea phase still, right?
Yeah. It's incredible.
Yeah. So is it just early days still? Like, is it just like new for, like, I know Clo's been around for 10 years. Like, it's not that new, but what is it? Why isn't everybody using this?
They've actually been around for almost 15 years now. And Browsware has been around for at least 20, I would say. Because they, I think, started early 2000s. Clo started in 2009. It's funny. We're at this point where you could say it's early days to the masses, but once you're tapped into the 3D world, it seems prevalent and just the norm. So my partner is actually an architect, and it's definitely not to the degree of an industry like architecture or product development, where that's just, it's literally Adobe Illustrator to them. Everyone uses 3D. It's just the standard.
Mm-hmm.
I keep saying, and maybe COVID set us back a little bit, but I keep saying within 5 years that it will replace Illustrator from a tech packing standpoint. And maybe I've just kept pushing that 5 years back and back, and it's going slower than I thought.
Yeah.
But when I was in that, like, in the world, in the sense of working for Clo, pretty much every like global brand that you hear of, if they're not using 3D, they are aware of it and they're probably in the like process of trying to figure out how to implement it and which one to buy, and probably extremely stressed about being behind. Like any global brand is using it or aware of it, and then it's definitely trickling down from there. The manufacturing world is for sure tapped in, and probably more so than the brands. So I feel like
it really... Like the factories, you mean?
Yeah, like Asia are heavy users, just being such a manufacturing industry. And when Klo opened their first office in India, it just exploded. It was like they could not keep up with the demand because India was just like, they're ready. They were like, when are we going to get 3D? Because they're also a high, like they kind of have a good mix of both brands and manufacturing, but they're still heavily like a manufacturing region. So those people don't need as much convincing at all because you tell them it saves you time and money and they can see it.
Yeah.
They'll have a hard time with the hurdle of like the upfront cost, which is greater when you're an enterprise, but they can see it pretty early on, the value. And then, yeah, like I said, I think Australia is actually the slowest adopter in the world.
I'm pretty sure Canada's not far behind.
You might think that, but when I was working at Klo, I actually trained a lot of people in Canada, you know, Lululemon, Canada Goose, Arc'teryx. And then, so you know, the heavy hitters and especially activewear and technical apparel are the first adopters. So Arc'teryx has been using it for ages, and you can look at their website and see.
Yeah, you can't even tell. They're so good. Yeah. Does Lululemon as well?
They've been tapped into 3D for a long time. Like I worked for Lululemon, and I was first exposed to 3D at that job, but it was browsware at first.
Okay.
And so then as I was at Klo, they adopted Klo, and they were doing both. And I'm pretty sure they still use both, but I'm not.
Okay.
The people I know have moved on, so I'm not sure exactly what they're doing currently, but they were definitely using a mix.
Do a lot of companies use both?
The bigger companies do. I find what happens is a lot of people started with browsware because it was the first. And then often they adopt Klo later. Very often Klo pushes out browsware. I do think that was kind of a shift that was happening in the industry. But people can still be a bit attached to browsware as a fitting tool. There's a lot of debate around that, which we can get into.
Yeah.
But I think the brands that can afford it are kind of just like, yeah, sure, we'll use both. There's often like battles at some of these bigger brands between like the pattern making and the tech team being proficient in browsware and the design team loving Klo, and then they kind of duke it out. So I think sometimes, like, as long as they can afford it, the higher ups are just like, okay, you just use what works.
Yeah.
What gets the job done.
Okay. What's your opinion? Well, we know you love Klo. It's like browsware versus Klo. Let's talk about that.
I'm slowly coming to terms and trying to concede the point that maybe browsware is more accurate for fit, which I find so concerning, but just because I am such a diehard, and it's not because I worked there. I pretty much worked there because I was already like, oh, this is it. I just think I love Klo as a company all around and just the way that they approach everything. And I also think they have the best foundation in terms of user experience and just the overall program and ease of use. And so my feeling from there is like the rest is just tweaking and fine tuning. And they, you know, deliver new features so regularly. And the way their 2D CAD capabilities have changed over the last 2 to 3 years, is just mind-blowing. So I just feel like the progress they make is so exponential that I have hope for that. Whereas I think that browseware is starting from a more difficult foundation, just because I think that their UX and overall like ease in learning the software is more challenging. Maybe it's because they started earlier as well. They have like this inherent built-in structure of this kind of like 90s looking, you know, kind of similar to 2D CAD. They came from, you know, the pattern making fashion 2D CAD world. They were catering to those people. And whether intentionally or not, they made the software more similar to that. And Clo is more similar looking to Adobe. And if you've ever looked at a 2D CAD software, it's like MS-DOS. You're like, why does this look like something that was created in the 80s, 90s? So there's that element. But yeah, I've been dabbling a little bit through a pattern maker that I've been working with who has access to browseware. I actually joined the indie program, but I just haven't had the time or the brain space to delve into learning it. But she's been just double checking the fit of things in browseware. And it's interesting because I think if Clo improved in this way, it could kind of rub some of their users the wrong way, because I think Clo has so many users that are kind of outside of the fashion realm. They're not necessarily using it for physical production or accuracy. And I think they're actually attracted to the fact that garments often just look kind of flat and sleek. And they can fall into that trap that I think people early on in their fashion career fall into, where they're trying to sort of eliminate every wrinkle and line in order to get the quote perfect fit, which really just makes it like skin tight leggings. And so browseware, where it'll actually show you all the wrinkles and folds and fit issues that you would see in real life. And I think we like have kind of gotten away from remembering that that's what garments look like on people. And we need to train our eye to see that stuff in 3D as well, and not to try and take it all out. I think the things that they're better at are garment simulation. I just think it's like the tiniest bit more accurate in terms of materials and accurately showing the folds and wrinkles. And I think the sizing of the avatar is my other big complaint. I just think they have a more accurate ability to resize the avatar in a way that can help with fitting. There's some really core issues with the Clo avatar that I've been hounding them about for years that I just think make fitting like so tricky.
That's definitely the biggest drawback for me using Clo for intimate apparel. I mean, my the way I've gotten around that is by making avatars in DAZ 3D or sourcing them from, like, there's various other places. Alvinon, you can source avatars from there. But my experience has been exactly what you said. I was in the browseware indie program, and I gave myself like 3 months, I think, to like go through all of their training, which is good. Like, it's awesome. They give it to you all for free. And I did find exactly what you were saying. It's more difficult to use, but it is more accurate for fitting. And the avatars are better, but they're still not that good. Like, they're better. You have better control over them, but I still feel they're quite limited. I still feel like I'd want to go to at least as 3D for something more accurate.
Yeah, I've heard that. I mean, to be honest, when I look back at all the brands when working for Clo, anyone with like the budget was using Alvinon forms.
Alvinon, yeah.
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 Just because they didn't have to bother with it. They didn't have to go through the struggle of getting something accurate, and their factories would already be using the Alvinon forms.
It's nice to have a standard. One-to-one thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And in 3D, you're already restricted in the same way that you're restricted with fitting on a form in real life, like they can't tell you how it feels and you can only kind of deform the form so much in terms of like how tight something is and how it squeezes and everything. And you already have that limitation in 3D. So there's no real concern going from like a human looking avatar to a dress form looking avatar because it's not any different.
Yeah. You definitely, I mean, 3D doesn't have soft bodies. They're not squishy and they're not malleable. So it only gets you that far, but I still think it gets you quite far down your design route before you get to a physical sample. And then you can get to a physical sample and try it on a real human body, because no human bodies are ever the same as exactly the same as the Alvinon forms anyways, right? Like, it's just a starting point. Let's circle back around to your history, the start. You're a technical designer. Where did you start? Did you go to school for fashion?
I did. I went to school for fashion design in my hometown, which is Richmond, Virginia. So middle of the East Coast of the US. And I did that just because it's a great art school. I went to Virginia Commonwealth University, so VCU. I feel like I should just shout them out. And it's an amazing art school, and it's a, you know, public university. So it was at the time very affordable. I was in state. So it was just, I just wanted to have no debt and not, you know, end up with like, Parsons level debt. So I did that and then went straight to New York after school. I did have a couple, my first job in New York was at Juilliard, the school, the famous theater dance school, working in the prop shop. So I started out in the fine art side of things at uni, and I just knew I wanted to do something creative, didn't know what, and really like kind of bumped around a little bit before deciding to go into fashion. And I went into fashion because I was genuinely concerned, like, what will I do for a job? And I still couldn't see myself working in fashion, but I was like, I want the like saleable skill of making clothing. I just need some kind of skill that I could fall back on if I needed like an hourly rate, like kind of job.
Hard skill,
But I also, I ended up getting a minor in sculpture, which had started out as my major. So when I got out of there, I was like, still dead set. I'm not working in fashion. What is the hybrid of this? And that it felt like it was costumes, was kind of like merging fashion and art. So that got me into theater and props and upholstery, and pretty much anything that involved fabric was like my jam. But I pretty quickly got over that and wanted to be in fashion because I was just so sick of like the costuming world. Things are just like altered and re-altered, and the quality just gets so degraded over time that I was just like, oh, I want to make something from scratch that is like beautiful and new. So I really had like three jobs that were kind of like my core positions that shaped me throughout my career. So I spent about 10 years in it, with that little bit at the beginning of kind of dabbling around. But my first job that I say like raised me in fashion was for a company called Billy Reid, which is known for its menswear. It's a contemporary American brand, so like contemporary price point. And they actually are based out of Florence, Alabama. So a little tiny town in northern Alabama. But at the time, they had like a heavy presence on Bond Street in New York. And they had offices there and everything. So I ended up ultimately having an apartment in both towns and flying back and forth a lot. But that was really where I kind of like figured everything out. And also where I figured out, by having been a designer, that I was not a designer.
Okay. So you were doing the creative design for menswear?
I started as a tech designer and then became the men's designer. And then from there became the women's designer. But yeah, all of that, it was kind of just, you know, started as my first job and I just kept, they're like, the perfect brand if you want like upward mobility, because they did a pretty impressive business with such an insanely small team at the time. So it was like, I just made these massive jumps from being like entry level technical designer at a starting salary to like the men's designer working with Billy. Like,
oh, that's cool.
And then him being like, you take over women's, and I was in New York and he was in Alabama. And it just felt like just insane the amount of like responsibility that I was given. So it was just such a good learning process.
Was it like women's, your Itty's studio? I was poking around in there and you have some cool women's like suits. Is that what you were designing at that company?
Yeah. So, like I said, they're known for their menswear. They've won multiple, CFDA awards. And so, yeah, tailoring is a big part of it. And it has a very Southern, heritage and inspiration to the aesthetic. The women's, definitely because they're primarily a men's brand, definitely has a kind of men's inspired vibe. There's some tailoring and lots of outerwear, but the women's wear is hard because they've never quite figured it out. Billy's biggest inspiration, well, his biggest inspiration was his wife, which I thought was so cute. But his biggest inspiration for women's wear was Celine. So think of like lots of oversized things or like the Row, that kind of vibe. He wanted it to be very like elegant, oversized. But that also kind of lends itself to like a masculine quality as well, like wearing some kind of like shapeless silk dress,
or at least
silk dress, but then putting a tailored jacket over it.
Non-gendered,
Yeah, cool, and like penny loafers and things like that, boots, Chelsea boots, lots of that stuff. So
awesome.
Yeah.
All right. So you got got some experience working for Billy, and then what happened next?
I decided to just like live my life on Bond Street in New York. I went to Lululemon Lab, which was a design concept space, kind of an experiment that Lulu did only in New York and Vancouver.
Yeah, I remember and going to one in Vancouver once. Yeah.
Yeah, those were the only two labs. The plan, the poorly executed plan was like to open them all over the world. And it was a great, like, it was a really inspiring idea that just wasn't financially viable. But the idea was to take the athletic sportswear element of Lulu and kind of combine it with a streetwear aesthetic. And also the initial dream was that it would be very localized and that each lab would have different product and be inspired by its location. So ours was meant to be like,
yeah, when I went there, they were like asking me like very like detailed questions about what I thought about the design and like if I thought things should be different or like, yeah. So it seemed like that makes sense that that's what they
initially
were doing,
was,
like
it was
collecting
like
information like that.
Yeah, the Vancouver one inspired by like a Vancouver lifestyle and the New York one inspired. But of course, like, and there the other element was having like in-house manufacturing.
They had a whole workshop in there.
Yeah, the creative team was just in the back of the store. So we just had these like standing desks, a little team of four with two designers, two tech designers, and then like a whole sewing setup, like tons of machines, a giant pattern making table, and a whole team of like pattern makers and sewing technicians. And then downstairs, there were people like designing prints and like sourcing fabrics and product development and all of that and buying. But you can, as you can imagine, then it basically takes Lululemon and turns it into like an upstart small high-end fashion brand. And though Lululemon had the connections to pull that off in the beginning, where we were kind of getting favors from Lulu factories to do smaller runs, it just wasn't viable going, like, you could only do that for so long. And they hadn't really thought through, I don't think, how that was going to take off, especially if you're going to do different designs in each city and have like a separate, it's almost like having a ton of different companies under the Lulu umbrella. And, you know, anyone in fashion knows how hard it is to like run a small business, you know, quantity wise and price point and everything. It's just, we just had all of those same challenges.
A small amount of garments, it costs, the cost goes up significantly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we were selling garments for less than it cost us to make them.
Yeah.
And people were still complaining. They just couldn't comprehend. And it was still very expensive.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. They couldn't comprehend. First of all, if you look at the activewear world, people still have a hard time understanding why Lulu costs what it does. I have no trouble with that.
I
personally,
love Lulu,
having worked on it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I never in a million years would have worn Lululemon. I think the connotation of it. I just am not that type of person.
You're not a Lulu.
After having worked for them, like I just, the other day I felt like a walking advertisement for Lulu.
Yeah.
I was wearing like a bomber, a t-shirt and trousers, all Lululemon. I just think their stuff is so well made, so thoughtfully designed, so clever.
Yeah, well made. And like they're like, it's not just that the construction is good, but also the materials are good and the fit is good.
Yeah.
Like you can tell that, like I have tights, I swear, from like 10 years ago from Lululemon, like, and they last for so long. Yeah, I'm a big fan.
Yeah, they're amazing.
Yeah,
they really are.
So you liked working for them as well as a company?
Yeah, I loved working for them. I'm like the perfect candidate for Lulu. Like all the rumors and, you know, the stigma around Chip and just kind of their start and the whole, I don't know how much you know as a Canadian, I would imagine you've heard it all, but, you know, just all the talk around like sending people to Landmark and all of this personal development side of the company was like actually what drew me to it as opposed to something that concerned me. I was all about that stuff. And they, you know, they're not a perfect company, but they really do truly live up to the good things that he started with.
Mm-hmm.
At least in my experience, to me, it's just amazing to go into a company and have someone ask you like, what are your goals for the next 5 years, and truly not be bothered if like your goal is to leave Lululemon, if your goal is to become a competitor of Lululemon. Like it's, I mean, of course, I'm sure people at the very top had non-competes, but at least as just like a lowly tech designer, you know, your goal might be to become like to take over your boss's position. And you'd show this to your boss and they would be like, how do we get you there? Because their goal is to move up as well, or their goal is to shift over here, or their goal is to start their own business in 5 years. And people are just, they're realistic. They understand not everyone's going to work for Lululemon forever. But what's interesting is this mindset actually lends itself to people being very loyal and actually enjoying and wanting to stick with the company for a long time. So I loved it. My whole team got laid off, and that just had to do with the fact that the lab was like a little bit ill-conceived and changed hands a lot. And so I think it was hard to really get it off the ground.
Is that where you first were exposed to Chloe?
No, or that Browser? Was actually where I was first exposed to Browser. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So my boss's boss. So there were two of us in tech design, just my boss and me at the lab. And then she reported into a woman who I'm still in touch with and has her own business now. She was the director of global fit for all of Lululemon. So she was like the top dog of fit in the company. And she was using Browser. And she was like coming to New York to give talks about Browser at FIT and introducing us to it. And I saw it. And it's funny, you were talking about how you just can't comprehend when people see 3D, that their minds aren't just blown.
Yeah.
I do think there's this initial, like, just understanding what it even is and what it is. Do.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Because I had been throughout my time, even just at Billy Reid, I remember on flights just sitting down and writing out my dream 2D CAD software. So for like nearly a decade, I'd been dreaming up my ideal 2D CAD because I was just like, I need a faster way to do what I'm doing. And I just look at Gerber and Lectro and my brain explodes. And so I had this idea to like potentially start my own 2D CAD, which is like a little hilarious when I think about it now. But I was trying to hound like a high school friend at Google to help me develop it and whatever.
Cool.
I saw Browseware and I like the 3D element hadn't even crossed my mind. I don't know why. So I think I just didn't quite get, you know, how significant this could be. And because it's Browseware and still kind of had this 2D CAD vibe, I wasn't impressed. And it wasn't until I saw Chloe that I was like, oh my God, this is everything I wanted and so much more.
Yeah. I know, like it's, I still like, I've been working in it for a year and a half now, pretty intensely. And like, I'm still think it's so cool that you can like pinch a piece of the fabric and like shift it and like, you know, pinch it out or like just like manipulate it and then see what happens. And it's so cool.
It's so incredible.
Yeah. Or try like different fabrics on a garment. Like I'm going to try linen. I'm going to try cotton. I'm going to try what happens if I put spandex on this thing? And like, you can see like, right. Just, you can get an idea of what happens like right away.
I know. I feel like the just kind of like excitement and just how mind blown I was when I first came across it, it just really doesn't seem to have dissipated at all. Cause I still find myself, you know, talking to people about it the same way that I did in 2019.
Oh, that's so cool. So. Yeah, no, like, so I don't think I finished my story after I tried it for a month. I was like, I don't know. Is anybody using this? It doesn't seem like that. I don't know. Just like, there's got to be a reason why the whole, like, everybody's not using it. Like there's got to be a reason. I don't know what it is, but, and I also was like working on my Mac and it was crashing a lot. And I was like, that must be it. Like, it must suck. Like, it just must, people just must be having too many problems with it. And then after I posted a few things on Instagram that I did, I got a lot of like people that were very interested in it. I was like, okay, there's something to this. Like there's something to it. And like, and then I gave it some more of my time and I really never looked back. Like the more that I put into it, the more capabilities that I keep like learning that it can do. Mm-hmm. Like grading, like you can put in a whole size set of graded avatars and put in your graded patterns and get an idea of like how that all works. Like that's, how would you do that? Yeah. Like I learned how to do that. And I'm like, how would you do that? You'd need to have like a whole size set of people, like 10 different people. And
like, Lulu does that. We of course didn't have the money to do that at the lab, but the mainline fits size sets. And that is the first and to this day only company, because I haven't worked at any of the other like massive brands the size of Lulu. But that's the first time I've ever come across a company that had the money to fit on multiple sizes, because that is just, yeah, it's time-wise and cost, it's just like completely inaccessible to most brands. So yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Or my just theory like as to why it's not more prevalent is I just think something about the fashion world lends itself to people being Luddites. I just think we're all like at our core, we all started out as just like hands-on tactile sewing nerds. Like for the most part, most of us started out just like, I want to make my own clothes in this very like kind of anti-technology way. True. And I think I for sure am guilty of this. I just think we're all, because I don't see the same pushback in the architecture and product world and sort of the animation world. Like these people are like the new thing, they jump on it.
Yeah.
Fashion people are just so resistant to change, especially when it comes to technology. And we struggle with it. So we're like, oh, I just feel like I mastered Adobe Illustrator or whatever, OptiText, like 2D CAD. And the idea of then embarking on this other thing is just like,
true. Yeah, so daunting. It's a lot. Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah, I can see that. I watched a good, it was a YouTube, somebody on somebody's YouTube channel, and she talked about like whether AI was going to take over our jobs in fashion. It's like the big topic right now. Like, is AI going to take over everything? And she was like, like she like went through all these points, and then she was like, in the end,
the fashion industry is just too slow. like you don't have to worry about it. We don't have to worry about it. It's just that we're too slow to adapt and like change and adapt new technology. So I feel like who knows what's going to happen with AI, but I think we at least have like a good decade before we got to worry about it for fashion.
Yeah. I find it a little disheartening, but I try to remind myself, like, this is just the fear that everyone has with any new technology. And I'll get worried when you can type into AI what you want and it can create you an accurately fitting pattern. Yeah. Then I'll be really concerned.
Yeah. There's a lot of fear around it. There's Andrew Price on YouTube, who does 3D like Blender stuff. And he did a video on it recently as well. And he said, like, well, really, you don't have to, as long as you like are leading with creativity, you don't really have to worry about it. Like, it's a tool. It's a new tool that's going to be available to us, but it's not a human. Like, it can't do what we do. Mm-hmm. I'm not articulating that very well, but I don't find it scary because we're the ones that are going to keep up coming up with new ideas and new ways of using these tools. Like, it still comes from us humans first.
Yeah. I do feel like it becomes a little bit disheartening in the way that it can kind of outshine 3D users because it has that element of like they kind of look like an avatar or a bit like a character, like painted figure. And so it feels a bit like, oh, I could spend 5 minutes typing in a prompt and get this amazing imagery. And then over here, I've spent 100 hours creating these garments and these photorealistic renders. And once it just becomes commonplace to spit out some AI versions of like your fashion ideas, it like the work I've put in over here can also be just as quickly scrolled beyond.
Yeah,
and right. So it's going to be like catching up to people, getting a bit more of a discerning eye against like what is AI versus what has someone put like time and work into creating the 3D renders of, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a hot topic that I don't really enjoy talking about that much because I'm like, I feel like we don't have anything to be scared of yet. I could be wrong, you know, but yeah, for one thing, I don't think it's happening in fashion very quickly. And for the other, I feel like, you know, even if you can type in a prompt and spit out a good render, we are still going to be able to make it better. Like just being able to like, you will be able to take that render and make it better. So it might be able to get you to that starting place faster than it might have taken us 100 hours to do before. But mm-hmm. now you can start at that place and take it further. Like I'm interested to see where humans take it.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's get back to your story. So you worked for Lulu for a while. That's when you're first exposed to Browser. And then was it Chloe next?
Yeah, so I was at a company called Best Made, which was based in Brooklyn and has since been sold off to Duluth Trading, which is a big, massive brand in the US. But it was like a men's outdoor company. And I'd gone there when my team got laid off at Lululemon, and a friend of mine from Lulu went to Canada Goose. And I'm at this, I guess it was late 2018. I'm at Best Made, kind of just feeling a bit like the role of a tech designer can get like quite repetitive, and you do the same fit changes over and over. You're kind of like memorizing these specs, and now you're able to just spit them out. Garment measuring becomes tedious. So I was just kind of like wanting to take it further and still ruminating on this idea of my ideal 2D CAD, and kind of had this Browser in the back of my head, like, what's that about? And she messaged me and was like, hey, we just got demos from like every 3D software company, and you need to check out this company called Chloe. And I immediately did, immediately was just enamored. And when I saw that they had individual licenses, I was like, oh my God, I can just get this myself and learn it. And then at the same time, I feel like this was all just within like, you know, the one Google search, all at the same time saw that they were hiring in their New York office. And I was so kind of feeling burnt out on tech design that I was like, yes, I need a change. I want to get into this new world and just do something totally different. And you are a better person than I am because I cannot, I am actually not good at teaching myself. So that's why I'm like so meticulous with my tutorials and building this course that I'm working on. Cause I'm like, how do I make this as easy as possible for someone to learn? Because I personally, I don't know what it is, but I'm just not someone that could sit down with a YouTube series and teach myself. So I really wanted to go to Chloe, not only to get in that world, but also just to learn the software from the like start to finish. I wanted to like know it inside out, which I felt like I missed that sort of education with Adobe. I felt like Illustrator and Photoshop, I just kind of learned on the job and on the fly and dabbled with in school. And so I really wanted it to be more comprehensive. So I applied. And by Christmas of 2018, I was like getting offered the job with some coercion. I was coercing them into offering me the job. My boss, the CEO of Chloe, had called me, basically was like, yeah, we want to hire you, but we don't think that you'll like it. It's like, what? It's an interesting thing, like going back to Chloe being democratic. I do think this is kind of a, so they're a Korean company. They're based out of Seoul. And I think it is a cultural thing for sure that has bled into the spirit of the company of things being fair and democratic. That's very much a Korean attitude. And I think he had been a little disheartened because he was based in the New York office and he was struggling with some of the American employees feeling like everyone having the same title and like, you know, salaries were definitely good enough, but not super high. There wasn't a ton of upward mobility because it was just kind of like, we're all even. So you could come in, and I came in as like someone with 10 years of industry experience, had the same job title as someone fresh out of school. Which at the time I had just gotten so burnt out on this like hierarchy, ladder climbing attitude in the fashion industry. I felt like people distracted themselves from not enjoying their day-to-day job by trying to attain the next title and the salary bump and just focusing on that. And for me, that just was like not enough. And I had climbed pretty quickly, I felt like, in terms of my title and my salary. And I wasn't happy with what I was doing. I was like, I am ready to just enjoy my job as long as I can live off of what you can pay me. So anyway, yeah, I had to kind of coerce him into like believing that I was going to be okay and not,
I like you it. Know, after, promise, I promise.
I promise I won't be asking for a raise in 2 months. But yeah, to me, that was like one of the things I loved about the company is kind of that even playing field.
Oh, that's so interesting to hear because I don't know much about the company. Yeah, I really liked hearing that. So they're based out of Seoul and they don't have that many offices around the world. There's New York and there's France and India.
There's actually quite a lot. Yeah. Well, I think it's quite a lot. So there's New York and LA now. LA was opened right at the tail end of like just before COVID, right when I was leaving. Their Europe office was one of the earliest offices outside of Seoul, and that's in Munich, Germany. And then, yes, they expanded recently to Paris. They also have a satellite office, or maybe it's a full-on office now in Spain.
Okay.
I believe Barcelona. They've opened or were in the process of opening in South America, I think in Brazil. They have their one in Bangalore, India. They have Hong Kong, Beijing. Yeah.
Okay,
And then
cool.
they've hired recently, there is one employee here in Australia.
Okay.
That was my dream when I moved here, is I was going to
Okay.
start a Clo office. And I
Okay.
did talk to them about it, and it wasn't the right time for me for what and the right for what they needed and were willing to do. It just wasn't the right fit. But I have like befriended the person they hired, of course, because I'm
Okay, yeah.
aggressive networking. So she's kind of, yeah, I would say it's like a satellite office, or maybe she's kind of like a freelancer consultant. Like it's very early days, but they have
Okay.
someone here in
Okay.
Australia.
Cool. So there's hope because I'm always like I always say to my husband, we're on a little tiny island in on the east coast of Canada, and it's like there's no fashion industry at all here, like nothing. And I'll see like jobs for Clo in New York, and I'm like, oh man, like wouldn't that be so much fun to just like work in Clo at Clo and just learn everything and just tell them all the things that I want them to improve on and like yeah.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Yeah. So
I still
maybe one day in the
sometimes
future.
pretend that I work there. Like, just oh, their employee emails are basically like their name at Clo3D. And so
Okay.
I will just like, yeah, abuse my knowledge of that and like ask
Just
questions and
yeah.
hound them.
That's
I try
super
not to overstep these days. I try to go through the right
cool.
channels, but it's hard.
Okay, so that's when you left Chloe, you moved to Australia.
Yeah, so I had planned already. So I became pregnant at the start of 2020, and my husband and I had been planning to move to Australia later in the year, and he's Australian. And then COVID happened, so yeah, we didn't want to raise a kid in New York, and we couldn't agree on any other city in America. And Melbourne kind of like fit everything we were looking for, and also had his parents here to help with childcare and stuff.
That
So
is useful.
it was very useful. So I had already talked to my boss early in the year, like very early on, told him about this plan, and then at some point told him I was pregnant, and then that slowly kind of trickled down to the team. And then, but I'm like the type of person, for some reason, I give like exorbitant amounts of notice with leaving a job. I feel so much responsibility for some reason. And especially with Chloe, I wasn't leaving because I was like done with it. I was still so much like, I was also brainstorming with him how I could work for Chloe in Australia and all of this stuff.
Cool.
So yeah, we'd been talking about it for months, but it was still months away as well. And then when COVID started and just escalated very quickly, Australia announced that the border was closing in 10 days. Yeah, so everyone had 10 days notice, and we were like, okay, we either have 10 days to make this happen, or we need to be okay with it not happening. And we just decided. So I quit Clo with like 2 days notice.
Oh
I think I found out on a Wednesday, and I was like, Friday's gonna have to be my last day.
Oh man. So what was your job there? I saw, I'm sure on Instagram maybe that you were part of the like you developed the training for it. I'm doing the advanced training next week. I was going to ask you if you had
Oh, nice.
any part of that.
So they have a really amazing balance. This is another reason that I love them as a company for 3D, where they have always tried to keep a good balance of like sort of a 50-50 split of developers and sort of core like technology software people versus fashion industry people. So there's a pretty, I'm sure it's a little bit off from being 50-50 now, but there's a pretty even split at the company. So in Seoul, a lot of who are based in Seoul are the software developers, like front end and back end, UX, like user experience people, that whole world. And then the other realm are what they basically call 3D designers, and there may be other roles that they have now, but at the time it was just everyone was a 3D designer that was on that side, other than sales. Then there's salespeople that they call business development. So each of those locations that I talked about, including Seoul, they have 3D designers in Seoul as well. But all the other offices are mostly 3D designers with like one or two business development people. And so the job is really great because it encompasses so much that what happens is when you have an office of like 10 or 12 people all doing the same role that has so many parts, people can then sort of gravitate towards the thing that they're good at and also most interested in. So there are core elements to the job of basically you are responsible for training teams. So anytime a company buys the software as an enterprise, like the enterprise software, they get their team trained by CLO employees. So you come out for like, it used to be that we flew to them before COVID, and now I think they're probably somewhere transitioning into like going back to that and also teaching online. But we would fly out to you and teach the whole team anywhere from like 3 to 5 days. And so there's like, that's what they would call the basic training. It's like a start to finish, like get you up and running, but it is pretty in depth because it's like 3 to 5 like business days, like 8 hour days.
That's intense. The software. That's intense. Yeah, that's a lot of learning that you can pack in, because every little intense thing doesn't take that much time. Like, but it's a big program.
Yeah, it's very intense. And sometimes you'd kind of have to cater. Maybe you'd cater it to, I'm teaching a team of designers, so it's very like design heavy, talking about colorways and all of the things that are very useful to designers. And then this time I'm teaching pattern makers or tech designers, and it's very pattern and fit heavy. So you could cater it that way. There was generally like a basic training, and you would get it coming into the company because most people come in without knowing the software, or at least not knowing it as in depth as they need to. And so you'd go through that basic training, but in such a like granular, drawn out, more in-depth way when you're working for the company. And so there is kind of this template that you go out into the world and teach when you first start out, but very early on you had the freedom to teach it however you wanted. So there was a lot of like creativity and adapting that structure for how you teach. And then yeah, like you said, there's advanced trainings that people would develop. I loved this about the company. I felt like, you know, there was so much freedom in how you did something. And then also like such a kind of collective mindset where it's like someone in the Europe team developed this advanced training and they would just like disperse it out to everyone to use. And then you could use it and you could tweak it in your own way. Someone on my team developed a really great PDF to go along with the training. And he just like passed it to me and gave me the InDesign file. And then I could like rearrange it and drop my own images in. There wasn't any sort of feeling of like
that's
ownership.
That's my work. Yeah, yeah. That's super cool.
It was so nice. That's something I loved about it. So yeah.
That reminds me of like when I was going through my flying training, I was really lucky that I got to go through with a really close group of people. And so like we would study together and we would like practice our red pages and all like that stuff together, but we would also share information like, oh, I had this flight today and this thing happened. And you like, that's so like, that is the best way to learn. And it's the best way to like grow the whole team and the whole like, just the objective of whatever we're trying to achieve, right? Like it's by just that shared knowledge. I never can articulate the things that I'm trying to say, but that's
no,
like,
I get it. I do think it, I still believe that the root of it, I think, comes from their Korean culture. Like I truly see the connection there, but yeah, I just think, I don't want to discount the fact that I think they do work very hard at maintaining it, especially when it's a global business and every culture has their own like sort of standards and like hierarchies and ways of working that are traditional to business, they either have to like actively kind of work against that or adapt to it a little bit. But for me, it was something that I had been looking for in a company culture.
Yeah.
Like actively was really struggling with this sort of, everything felt proprietary and like non-competes
yeah,
and non-disclosures
like, yeah,
and
all
just
hidden.
Like
this is our
so
information.
Secret.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Gatekeeping. Like I think fashion is the most gate-kept industry. And so, it was so refreshing to me.
Have you ever heard of The Infinite Game by Simon Sinek? It's a book. I just recently read it and I highly recommend it if like this is what you're interested in.
No, but I love Simon Sinek. I've
okay,
never
yeah.
heard that one.
Okay, yeah. So check it out, The Infinite Game. And he talks about how the way capitalism right now is established is a finite game, and there's like it's not sustainable. Like there's clear winners and there's clear losers, and the goal, like nobody's happy in the end. But when businesses can establish themselves to be thinking from an infinite mindset, and that the goal is not to make the most money, but to make the best product or to make the most useful product. It sounds like I feel like Chloe would fall into this category.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think that's why I'm so kind of loyal to them as a software, because I enjoyed working there so much and I appreciated the culture of the company so much.
So you finally come around to doing your own thing, because you said like this is something you've always been thinking about, right? Like having being your own working for yourself. And so you developed ID Studio, which I'm sorry,
Ides of March.
You have developed the studio, and you came out recently with some really, really amazing renders. Can you talk about your partnership with what's her name? The Bias Cut Woman.
Yes, I'm going to have to out him a little bit. So Bias Cut Woman is a man.
Okay.
We've had a whole talk about this, and I tried to get him to kind of clarify this publicly online because I felt a little bit catfished. So, and I think it can be like very easily explained. He's just a guy that's very interested in women's fashion. I think he seems to be like very focused on Madeline Vianney, but I think it's like the bias cut thing that he's really like honing in on. So I feel like just a little blurb under his Instagram of like just a guy really interested in X would make sense. But yeah, to me it's hilarious. I'm like, does it not seem weird to you that like your email address is bias cut woman? And you know, it's funny to me. His name
does
is
he
Pablos.
Work in Blender? Are those renders in Blender? Do you know?
The renders are in Chloe.
In Chloe, cool.
Yeah,
that's very cool.
Which I love because I am like a Chloe purist. And so I'm like, how can I do everything in Chloe?
Yeah, exactly. I've seen that. Like it's nice to not have to leave the program for anything.
Yeah. And I love that about it too, because I do think that's possible, but I'm also aware that there are programs that focus on one particular thing like rendering and can do it a bit better than someone that does it all. So
yeah,
you know, I'm willing to partner.
Yeah. Chloe does a good job. I'm pretty happy with the rendering capabilities in Chloe.
Yeah, me too. So yeah, he rendered them in Chloe. It's a Daz avatar and he does the textures in Adobe Substance Designer.
Cool.
So I reached out to him when I first came across the Instagram, and I was really drawn to it because one of the just sort of personal creative goals that I had with Ides was also kind of selfishly, it's like as working in fashion and always wanting to start your own business, there's always that thing in the back of your mind of like starting your own brand. And so there was this element of like, oh, well, at least I can like kind of have an aesthetic here and create a bit of a brand, even if it's all digital. And I feel like everything in the 3D world right now really looks quite similar. I think part of it is just that 3D software lends itself well to doing sort of embellished things, technical things, like fabrics often look slick and shiny, and you can kind of blow those attributes out in a way that looks either very cool and futuristic or is easier to achieve like a photorealism than it would be to just have like a linen. You know, like it's almost like the more plain or kind of traditional and sleek your garment is, the more difficult it is to look photorealistic or exciting and interesting in 3D. So for me, I see that as a bit of a challenge. And also it's just that the technical and activewear world is not really my vibe. So I was really drawn to his work because I was like, wow, this is so different. He's getting that sort of tactile, photorealistic, beautiful quality of 3D that I'm aiming for, and just doing it so differently. He also seemed to be like, I mean, I love that he's into these really unique patterns, like bias, when things are bias cut, the patterns can be really interesting. And he does these cool kind of schematic versions of them to show you how the pattern works. And I was just like, I just nerdily started like messaging him being like, how did you do this? And like, oh, that's amazing and whatever. Just we kind of connected on Instagram. And I was saying like, I'd love to work with you at some point. I'd love to hire you to do some renders or something. And it just kind of evolved. He shared some textures with people for free on the Clo Discord. I don't know if you saw him do that, but
was it recently? I don't know if I've seen that.
I don't know. People would ask questions and he'd just be like, here's a tool. They would be like, I can't find a tool. And he would just pass them off for free. And so I finally at some point was like, you make textures? So yeah, we, you know, just connected from Instagram to email, and I gave him like a proposal of like, I want to do, I'm working on this tailoring collection. I'd love to do a collection of tailoring fabrics because I do find it so difficult to find just like, even with all of the texture companies out there, I find it so difficult to find just like everyday wearable fabrics, like just beautiful, luxurious fabrics that you would use if I was designing an actual collection. Everything feels the need to be like overly embellished and like, you know, you look at Adobe Substance fabrics and it's like camo mesh with like rips and tears. It's just like they're just really trying to show what's possible in 3D, right, as opposed to like serve the fashion community, I think. So I was trying to kind of fill that hole in the market, and so he made a collection of fabrics. Like, you know, we kind of collaborated on the direction of them. And then I was also like, oh, I'd love if you could do some renders. And because he uses Daz avatars, I just kind of like chose one of the ones he'd already used. And I had this inspiration that I was working from. So he kind of like tweaked the hair and chose the shoes based on that. And he renders them in Clo, and then he just does a little retouching in Lightroom. But okay. I just love his aesthetic.
I do. So yeah, they're great. Beautiful. He did a really, really good job. Definitely, if you're listening to this, I will be putting the links below. So you should go check it out. What else was I was going to ask something else on that. Oh, you don't do any, you don't go into any other programs. You're strictly Clo.
Pretty much. And it's,
or did you dabble?
No, I pretty much stick with Clo. I don't know. I don't know if this is just like my hyper-focused brain or like an inability to like take in too much. Like I said, I think if I were kind of experimenting in other software, I did get the, like I joined the indie program for Browseware. And for me, that would be where I might go. So actually, you know, you were talking about before we started the post I made on Instagram yesterday, I think it was. And that is sort of, I made that post because of something I was struggling with myself, of feeling like I kind of just always had this voice nagging me saying like, oh, you need to learn a 3D modeling software to pair with Clo. And oh, like, you know, people keep kind of like scoffing at me rendering everything in Clo, or like asking if I use Blender, asking if I use KeyShot or what other rendering software I use, and feeling like I just needed to learn all of these things and become an expert in every area. And I just felt like I finally just had to put my blinders up and say, no, these are the things I'm passionate about. And I want to just continue to go deeper into the realm of pattern accuracy and fit in 3D. And if that means that I need to explore Browseware and do a comparison, then I will. But my focus with IDEs is really on people that are like ultimately using 3D as a stepping stone to physical production, like using it to be more sustainable, more time efficient, more cost effective. And so I'm trying to keep that like that focus on that area and not get diverted into all the fun elements of 3D. Like, yes, it's so fun to have these beautiful images at the end, and those are the things that can like draw people to your products and your company. But that is not my main gig. And so I just feel like there's people doing it better than me, and I may as well like let them, you know, shine and show off their expertise and like have some partners and not like dilute my focus too much, because I just think you just can't do it all.
Yeah, I had a very similar experience. Like after I started feeling like I was pretty comfortable in Clo, I was like, okay, now I need to learn Blender. And then I did Andrew Price's Blender donut series, and it took me like 3 months to make this donut in Blender. And I'm like, man, that was so hard. And then like I was watching a lot of like just YouTube tutorials about 3D, like doing things in 3D, and they were all saying, yeah, it takes a long time. It takes a really long time to get really good at doing things in 3D. And the time is limited, right? Like I want to be good at pattern drafting, and I'm exactly the same as you. I want to be good at making patterns that are going to be usable in the real world. Like that's what I'm most interested in. And I've had to do the same thing, just like cull all of my like squirrel tendencies to like chase the next shiny thing. And that's been my focus for this year, to like go deeper. Same is the like exactly the same. Yeah.
I also think it's a really fun challenge. So I've nerded out a little bit, as I'm sure you've seen. Like, there's something to limiting myself to Clo. Because I feel so comfortable in it, and I, you know, am at this point now, I can really experiment. And I find it like this kind of math problem solving thing to create like 3D objects in Clo. Like, how can I do this thing? Or I want to make this sort of like almost like an animation video element. Like, how can I use simulation? I've like turned the avatar upside down and like simulated something. Off, this is like an idea I've been working on that hasn't yet been published, but my idea was to use gravity to like let the garment fall off the avatar, but film it upside down, like using the gravity to have it fall to the floor, so that then you
Yeah.
could flip the video over and it would and reverse the
Oh,
video,
okay, it looked like
and it
it's
would look like the
falling
garment was
onto it.
falling
That's
onto
super
the
cool.
avatar.
Oh, I can't
But
wait to
it's
see
like,
that.
I'm sure that's possible in KeyShot in such an easier way. So but I think there's something, I feel like I come up with things that, you know, wouldn't be figured out because I'm just limiting myself to working in Clo and, you know,
Yeah, that kind of play,
experimenting.
like for sure, it might not be applicable to things that you're doing right now, but you get better at using the program, and then the techniques that you figure out to do these things that aren't directly related to what you're doing, they become like you're able to like pull on them and like bring them into the workflow that you're doing. Like it's yeah, I find that like once you stick in the program and you just like you just I find that you just keep growing in Clo. Like that's what I've been it's been the most fun for me, is that I keep growing, which is very satisfying.
Yeah, I feel like I've come up with this new definition of being an expert, and I watched this really amazing TikTok recently where this guy was talking about fluency in a language, and it to me translates perfectly to being an expert in a software. And it was just that he said, like, we think of fluency as like you know all the words and you can speak it, right? But a 5-year-old native English speaker is fluent in English, but they don't have the vocabulary that I do. And so what he was saying was like, he didn't consider himself fluent in this second language that he spoke because he still has to think about how to construct a sentence. He thinks about the grammar and he makes mistakes. And there are just mistakes that a native English speaker, or he was talking about Hebrew, that a native speaker would just never make because they don't have to think about it. So I'm trying to look at being an expert at something in that same way where it's like, I don't know everything there is to know about Clo, but I know Clo well enough that there are certain things that are just inherent to me in when you stumble upon like simulation issues, collision issues. When something happens, it's like I understand the software well enough. I don't have to think about how to solve it. I just go through any number of steps that have worked in the past with any other problems I've come across. And it's almost like I don't have to think about the grammar.
Yeah.
I can figure it out. And I'm just now expanding my vocabulary. So maybe I'm like
Yeah.
high school level and
Yeah,
like
yeah,
broadening to like, oh, now
yeah.
I'm studying like literature
I
at uni.
know. You really have to be, I think that's part of, like the barriers to people starting it and getting better at it. You really have to embrace the problem solving and like no, like it's just continuous problem solving. And like you say, like eventually you've solved that same problem so many times in so many different ways that that problem is no longer a problem to you anymore. But then there's new problems that you encounter and you figure out different ways of solving them. So that's a really good
Yeah.
analogy. I saw you reference the 10,000 hours, Malcolm Gladwell. That's,
Yeah.
yeah, I'm a big fan. Yeah.
I actually
Blink
had
by
to do
Malcolm
some
Gladwell.
math. Yeah, I did some
To
math to
see how long
figure out
you've
like
been working
actually
in it.
how long have I been working? I mean, it was a very rough estimate, but
Yeah.
I was like, oh yeah, I'm only at around like seven, somewhere between 6 and 7,000,
It
which
takes a long
seems
time.
crazy because of
Yeah.
how much I've worked in it
Yeah.
just constantly for years. So
Yeah,
yeah, it takes a
it takes
long
a
time to be
long
an
time.
expert.
Yeah. But it's fun.
Oh, what was I gonna say? Oh, this just was making me think about, I was telling you that post I did about being an expert and how you can't learn it all did really well. And the other post that I did recently, basically people are just really resonating with the fact that people they think are experts are having the same problems as them. I made a post of the video of the process of me tying a tie in Clo because we now sell, as part of the tailoring collection, we sell a
Yeah, that was
tie that's
intense.
so it's just so ugly. And I use like some really weird techniques that people might not think about in order to like solve the problems of collision that happen when you're like doing a winze or not in Clo.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And I got such a good response because I think people really love to see that like the problems they're experiencing aren't because they're beginners and they're doing something wrong, but because they're beginners, they don't know the steps of like these five things to try in order to find a
Yeah.
solution, you
Right.
know?
Yeah. I, when you first start, you just keep trying the same thing. Like that was my experience anyways. Like you just keep trying the same thing over and over and be like, okay, this is like that's and that's was my frustration. Like even just things like I would be importing a pattern. I didn't realize I was importing at the wrong scale. So it was trying to, my computer was trying to import this gigantic pattern and it would just like never import. And I had no idea like that was the problem. Until I don't know, it just like kept trying to import the same pattern. Eventually, I gave up on it and tried something else. But yeah, it just takes
Yeah.
time to learn.
At Clo, I felt like, the 3D designers, we all kind of considered like that first year. Like people would start to feel proficient after a few months. And we'd all kind of just they, because I was still like the early bird, would all kind of like roll their eyes a little bit and be like, okay, your first year is really spent in learning the solutions to all the problems that arise. But what's amazing is you get to a point where you can be teaching a group of people and someone raises their hand when you're doing something. And it's like, before they even ask the question, you already know the five potential things that have gone wrong.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you could always like cut them off halfway through their question and just say like, well, did you right click on the thing?
Or right, did you right, right.
In the background, yeah, like yeah. Just these things that you learn yeah. over time.
Yeah. And you forget them. Like, I taught a, just like a beginner's workshop last fall for intimate apparel users. And, I thought it was a good time to be teaching this beginner's workshop because like I had just gotten past the beginner like stage. So like all of that like stuff was fresh in my mind, like exactly what you're saying. Maybe you clicked on the background, you didn't click on this particular thing that you need to click on. And I feel like you might lose that over time, like, or maybe not. Maybe you're very experienced now, so maybe you don't, maybe you still feel like you can see. And you've also been
I think teaching, it depends so. On yeah, I think it's the teaching thing. So I've been teaching the whole way. Like I taught, you know, as a Clo designer at Clo, and then I taught Clo at RMIT when I first moved to Australia. So I think it's like having that teacher's mindset, because for sure in other skills or software that I know where I never had to teach it, sometimes I just know the thing. Like I'll ask my husband a question about something in Photoshop and he'll be like, oh, it's just this hotkey. And I'm like, yeah, but where is it?
Yeah.
In
yeah.
software. And
yeah.
he's like, I actually have no idea.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I think you can very much become like an expert yourself that doesn't have that same knowledge to teach, because you have forgotten the problems you can come across as
those
a beginner.
First, yeah. Yeah, totally. Oh, well, we are well over time. It was such a good conversation. I've been wrapping up the podcast with, what is your favorite part and your worst part of being a designer? But maybe in this case, we'll say working with Clo. Oh,
okay. Yeah, I was going to say, like, it's funny that you asked that, because I was like, I'm not actually a designer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man. My favorite thing and least favorite thing about working with Clo? Oh, my least favorite thing currently is just the amount of RAM that my computer has. And I really hope that this isn't too much of a deterrent or a hurdle for people when getting into 3D, that it does require like a decent computer. And I don't think any of us like think about that when we buy computers. We're always like yeah. thinking of like PC or Mac, aesthetic, whatever, and then just like price. And it's not really, even working in like graphics and Adobe, you really don't have to worry too much about the specs of your computer. And so 3D is a very new thing for people, where suddenly the computer specs are extremely important. Like you said, when you started and you were on a Mac that may or may not have even been like a very powerful Mac, because why would you need it?
Yeah, exactly.
You can immediately, you like can really early on like blame that on the software itself. So I would say my biggest frustration right now is that I'm working on a computer that just doesn't make sense for someone who's running a 3D business.
Yeah.
So I've just been meaning to upgrade from what I have since like the start of this year. So that's my only frustration, really. My favorite thing is just like the problem solving element. I feel like even spending over a decade in the fit world, I didn't realize how much that did, but also didn't translate to pattern making. So that's why I've partnered with someone to have them. We recently re-released some patterns with just very minor changes. And then she helped me build out the tailoring collection, because I just started feeling like I really wanted a second set of eyes on that. So the problem solving, because again, I'm trying to hone in on like what I'm focused on, and what I'm focused on is kind of like breaking it down and teaching it. And so I'm looking at it through the eyes of someone that isn't an expert pattern maker, and I have to go out and teach myself the thing and, you know, wade through all the technical jargon and the math that comes along with reading a pattern making book. And so my favorite thing is like, how do I distill this down into the most concise language and the easiest to follow tutorial and all of that? So it takes
Chloe
time.
Is so good for that. Like for teaching, like, you know, I learned out of a book, like drawing, you know, hand drawing the pattern. So you read like what's like line A to B is here. And then you draw your line A to B and, you know, like, and then you connect and then you add like 2 inches to that point. Then you split it in half and add a point 3/4 of the way down. And then it's like, man, it just, Chloe makes that stuff so much easier. So like, I think teaching, like this is going to be the way that pattern drafting is going to be taught not very long from now. And you can also see exactly what's happening in 3D, like while you're doing that, like as you're drafting the pattern, you can see how it's coming together on the 3D side. Like it's, eventually people are going to realize like, this is amazing.
And I just don't feel like the way we've always taught pattern making, it just doesn't work for my brain to like go in this very slow step-by-step way where you just don't even know what the thing is going to be.
What the line that I'm doing right now, like what does it end up being? Like, why am I drawing it?
Yeah, I feel like in a way to keep the language concise in a textbook, it's often like they just say the thing, like draw this line 2 inches out. And so I'm trying to not only simplify those steps, but then also say like, draw this line 2 inches out. This is going to be the point, like the front crotch point for your rise or something. Yeah, just a quick explanation to give people context.
The big picture. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being here. It was, I loved having this conversation. It was super nice meeting you. And for sure, I feel like we can do this again.
Cool. Let's do it again in 6 months when we have more to say.
I like it. Good plan. Yeah. After right, when you. Is your, two things, where can people find you? And do you have a program launched already? Or are you still, it's still in development?
It is in development. People can find me at IDES.studio. That's our website. And all of our social media is at IDES.studio. So that's Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. And in the meantime, they can watch our YouTube tutorials for free, but I am working on a course. I'm sort of working on many and really trying to figure out like where to focus my energy at the start. So if you follow us on social media, then I will let you know as soon as I know when it will be ready. The goal was like early 2023, but I think I think it's going to be like mid 2023.
Yeah. Well, I will definitely be checking that out when it comes out.
Awesome.
All right. Thanks so much.
All right.
Take care. Bye.